And now, the mantras and the chakras for Coke.
Things go better with Loco Coco. Things go better with Coke.
And now, kids from India, can you dig it? For their first appearance in the U.S., the mantras and the chakras.
Hare, 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 rama, 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 sis, boomba. I can't tell you how happy our village of Ganja is to be with you tonight in this incarnation. It was only a short while ago that we were starving happily together in our motherland. But thanks to the artist gods, Columbia Records, here we are. Holy cow. That's our holy cow. She makes possible one of our most beloved and venerated instruments, the ghatam. This ancient clay pot has been electrified and filled with ghee, which you know by now is rancid butter. Light the incense, please.
The ghatam, like all our rhythm instruments, employs a large number of rhythmic time scales of great intricacy and delicateness. Here is one of our simple scales. And a one and a two and a three and a four and a one and a four and a three and a one and a... yes. Then we have quarter time. And half time. And when we can get it, over time. And then there is tintal, or tea time. And a nine and a ten and dirty break.
Break.
And
break.
Of course the unavoidable cosmic time. And a one and a two and a 3.141617666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666666
India as you find here, the entire musical tradition is handed down from father to son. This instrument was passed on from my grandfather. As a matter of fact, this instrument is my grandfather.
Oh, don't pick on me, Ravi, me boy.
Don't fret, grandfather.
But the most difficult instrument of all, without which we would not have never considered recording our greatest hit, is the 90-foot C-sharp kunja, or water pipe, played by our friendly suburb of New Ganja.
Thank you, thank you. That was Bobby Zimmerman on the inevitable tambura, the hypnotic drone. Bobby, wake up. You're awake and feeling fine. Ah, sweet soul music, dedicated to Shiva, the god of destruction, without whom it would not be possible.
Our village would now like to play for you our newest recording, available on Akashic Records. It's a night raga we first played at a seek out in the Bengali jungle, featuring little Ali Ali Infri and the Bunga Bat, or live cobra.
Gee, it's dark. Where is everybody? What a scary jungle. Oh boy, oh my, there's a big snake over there. Oh, I hope he's not hungry. Oh, oh, he's hungry. I hope he doesn't come this way. He's coming! He's getting closer! Why doesn't it get light? Has anybody got a mongoose?
And then mom went back to college when she was 40.
Yeah.
And now is she heads the UN Wildlife Cell in India. So she's
wildlife
the,
what
cell? So oh, like okay. The, so she's oh, the so head she's of business in, development for
wildlife. What conservation?
For or? Conservation. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What is the focus in India? What are the animals?
Well, she was heavily focused on tigers and dolphins.
Yeah.
Like India's a big tiger reserve right now.
Yeah. Oh, really?
So, yeah. Most That's of the tigers in the world are actually in India.
Yeah, I give money.
And Texas, ironically.
Is that true?
Yeah.
There's also, but there's the North Carolina Tiger Rescue,
yeah.
Which I give money to because I went there.
In Texas, aren't they just in people's backyards?
Well, that's right. And then they end up at the North Carolina Tiger Rescue because
yeah.
Idiots buy tigers. And then, you know, when they're young and then when they grow up, they're like, there's a fucking tiger in my house.
<I know>. And if you've ever seen one of those animals up close,
man,
you realize just how much could go wrong, oh, how quickly.
Sure. Yeah, don't use them for your act and don't keep them as pets.
I know. I went to this temple in Thailand, and I was on my way there, and my mom said, you can't go there, where you get to hang with tigers.
Oh, yeah.
And it's this monastery.
Yeah.
And then she told me that they're drugging the tigers. So they sedate the tigers so that you can go and take a selfie with them and pet them. But it's a huge animal.
Big,
you know?
Man. Did you go, though?
No, I didn't go. I didn't go.
Oh. Oh.
A stick of sandalwood incense on you. Made it out of my old sandals. No, no, no. Let me light it for you. Yeah! Nah. Let me show you around the place a little bit. Oh, wow! Hey, man, where all those little people with the melty hats and the walls go? Hey, hey, man, now that you're so all down-home travel and all that, I'm going to take you up to the second bardo and orient you. Here's our Good Games People playroom.
Hello, my name is Mello Jello. I am the head of the athletic department. I head the athletic department. I am the athletic department head here. Oh, okay, beginners, everybody into the full lotus position. Oh, yes. Oh, that's very good. Yes, that's very good. Now you are going to stay there until you obtain true enlightenment.
Roman blessed. Grub, grub.
Grubs again. Grumble, grumble.
Folks, let me turn you on to medium rare. Mystic chef and guru.
Welcome to my humble chug wagon. While you are here, we will have everything from soup to nuts. Tonight, we have mushroom soup and peel nuts. Here, have some grubs. Oh, they are very tender baby worms, cooked over incense in holy corn oil. That's oil from the corns of holy men, known in your country as polyunsaturated ghee.
I have this fascination with India, but it's very shallow.
Okay,
it's really
sure.
Based on colors and food.
Okay, sure.
I've always wanted to go, but I'm afraid to go.
But isn't it a little hip? My fascination on America is based on Van Wilder and Game of Thrones, right? When I show up, so it's equally shallow at some level, right?
I always feel like I should know more, and I don't. I know it was colonized, and there's tension, and the thing with Pakistan's not great, even though you share some breads.
We're the same people, essentially.
But I always feel like if you're going to talk about wanting something or being interested in something, you should activate that interest.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
I mean, you'd fit right in.
Oh, really? Like in India?
If you showed up, you'd fit right in. I promise you. You're kind of like, you're chill.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know if I'm chill. I'd be a little panicky. I'd be scared I would get sick. That's the other thing about India is like people go, it's great. You're going to get sick for like 7 days. But after that, you're going to have a really nice time.
Well, it depends on what you do, right? Like, so don't show up and like can go straight to the street vendor and eat that shit, right? Like meet an Indian, go to the African house, have a home cooked meal first.
Yeah.
Like get your body ready.
Acclimated
a little bit. But like I produced a comedy festival some years ago, and I had like 6 LA comics come down, right?
Okay.
And they showed up with peanut butter in their suit.
If you want to experience our country, you have to taste our country. Therefore, the first thing you must put in your bloody mouth is Chyawanprash. Non-Indians. This is like an herbal organic paste for good health. It's like peanut butter if you hate your children. But this paste is also a mystery. Over 50 years, nobody knows what is actually in Chyawanprash. To write this joke, I googled what is in Chyawanprash. Google, the Google. Says gooseberry jam, ghee, honey, some herbs and spices. When even Google is like, I don't know, man, stuff. And yet you feel healthier when you have eaten Chyawanprash. Like you, buddy. If you have a headache, Atil, and I take a knife, and I stab you in your spleen, you don't have a headache anymore. And that is the core principle behind Chyawanprash. It inflicts upon you a taste so terrible at the end, just survival is considered good health. There is no one word to describe this taste, right? It tastes like commitment, that's all. It's the only food I've ever seen where you eat it with your face. Up here. And when you do, your leg shakes. Have you seen children eat Chyawanprash? It travels through your body faster than the neurons in your own brain. It's basically a stroke. 50 years of advertising, there is no slogan for Chyawanprash. I think the slogan is just... That should be the actual ad. Chyawanprash. Choke your children the legal way.
Who's this? Who are these comics?
They were like Laugh Factory comics.
Okay. Like, yeah, I would probably know them, but they were nervous, so they brought...
They were super nervous, so they brought food. And I'm like, we have fucking bread.
That's definitely true. That's one of the best things you guys have, is those breads.
And peanut butter. Yeah. And within one day, these guys had abandoned everything in their suitcase and were eating anything and everything.
Right, and they didn't get sick.
They didn't get sick, no. Oh. It depends. Like, I would say Mumbai, Delhi, all the big cities, you're going to be just fine.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But I'd wanted to come to America. This was my big dream, ladies and gentlemen. The first time I landed in New York City, I was 18 years old. As the sun rose over the Manhattan skyline, I wept. And it had nothing to do with America or the American dream. I had breakfast. Because I grew up in a world of cornflakes, guys. Imagine a universe of endless cornflakes. And not even real cornflakes. That dirty Mohan Makin's bullshit. Ostrich feces cornflakes. And then I landed in New York City and somebody gave me Cinnamon Toast Crunch. And it flipped my head. Because my brain knew that what I was eating was not cinnamon or toast or crunch. But my heart believed, ladies and gentlemen. Because what was cereal originally? It was just a way to get milk into kids, right? Make milk interesting for kids. What God did with tits, America did with breakfast cereal. The best version of that transaction. You don't appreciate your American luxury. I went to your supermarket the other day. You have an aisle for cereal. An aisle for cereal. There are countries with apartheid still. You have an aisle. It is 60 feet by 10 feet. That's 600. In Bombay, that's a school, okay? In Africa, that's a university, ladies and gentlemen. And your food looks so good, man. I saw an ad for French fries on TV the other day. It should have won an Oscar. I don't know why it didn't. Maybe a black guy made it. I'm not sure, but... Thank you, racist. You know, it was cinematic. There was a golden sunset and a philharmonic orchestra. And the fries fell down in slow motion with like CGI sprinkles of salt. And then there was a chick in a bikini and the fries rappled down the side of the titty really slowly. And you're just watching that going, oh, carbs, carbs, carbs. Potato. 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 I shouldn't have done that shit. Just myself. I'm gonna do legitimately intelligent material tonight. Your only takeaway is gonna be potato.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, and particularly the ladies, this station takes great pleasure in bringing you that little Frenchman who's been tickling your palates all over this universe, our own fresh chef.
Hello, lady. Take off your dress, slip into someone comfortable, and tie up your little apron. Be ready for some French cooking. And I'm your host, the French Fresh Chef. Today, lady. Thank you.
Bonjour.
Bonjour, chérie. Today, lady, potatoes in syrup. You will need 1/2 pound of slag, This is skinned slag, that is, you know, you mustn't pick the pulpy ones, although it's spotted with gray. It's needlessly expensive, and you won't be satisfied. We need an ounce of very sweet, dry, crystallized sugar, 2 pounds of potatoes, soft with yellow skin, and, of course, wine of sufficient quantity. Yeah, we are now ready to begin. Step one, the peeling. Take it off. Take it all off. Oh, thank you. Now, step two. Intricately, ladies, gently, disengage and take the potatoes into small dimensions, like this. Uh-huh. Let them to cook during 10 minutes in boiling wine and hot oil, lightly perfumed. I'm using my favorite wine, of course, on the Thunderbird label, Nippon Cadet Hot 69. Now, step three, ladies, test them. And pour the potatoes in cold water to make goose pimples. Good, now test them again. Then, and this is very important, that you do it loving them. You must eplush them. Finally, slip them into a casserole. Cover it with this crystallized sugar. Oh, the entire potatoes, please. Uh-huh. Remember now, cover them with water and let it set for sufficient time to be very sweet, just until the potatoes become transparent. Serve them cold, like a dessert. That's it, ladies. Eat hearty. And until next week, my Sylvan beauties, this is the Fresh Chef. Saying bon appetit.
Ginsburg!
How's the Veerda show? Potato! But it was an erotic experience. Chicken, bikini, there was sex with food. You can't do that shit with Indian food. Just get a naked chicken, drop hot dal all over her. Ah! But let's talk about this. Indian food, clap your hands if you agree, tastiest food on the planet. Not the best looking cuisine on the planet. Indian cuisine all looks like you digested some other cuisine. Saag paneer for dinner looks like you had Greek salad for lunch. Yeah, close your eyes, really picture it. Indian food is not visual food, ladies and gentlemen. Like, I watch MasterChef Australia. That is visual food, right? Oh, I love what you've done with the plating and the arrangement. It's amazing. You show those three dudes a bowl of bengan ka bharta, they will lose their mind. Was he in pain before he died? Can we make people look at this as a punishment for petty crimes? Like, Indian food is not visual food, it is audible food, ladies and gentlemen. Like, if you walked past an Indian restaurant and there was beautiful pictures of food, you would not go into that restaurant, would you, ladies and gentlemen? You wouldn't. But if the door opened and you heard somebody say, "Oh, panchot, bahut kha liya, gaan lag gayi," you would order everything on the menu. Also, Indian food is romantic food. You know, there's nothing romantic about sitting with somebody and having dinner. But if you can spend your life with somebody who's just... That is true love, ladies and gentlemen. You know, this is why I believe you could never have an Indian Bond villain. Because Bond villains are always eating or drinking something while they say some genuinely badass shit. "Greetings, Mr. Bond. You should not have come here today. Tonight, you die." "Bonsoir, Monsieur Bond. We have been expecting you. Tonight, you die." "Indian food? Yeah, hello, Bond. See, you should... eat this vindaloo. You'll die."
Gina showed up. They're like, "Hey man, what are you drinking?" "Bloody Mary. Need some salt for the glass though." "Gandhi." Gandhi was like, "All right." And then Nehru showed up and he's like, "Guys, we're free, we should do shots." And they're like, "Yeah, here's to freedom." "Yeah." But if I had to pick one for me, I grew up spending my summers in Patna, in a house with an Angan. Not Indians, an Angan is just a random open courtyard in the middle of the house where there should have been more house. Sometimes we will just build a house around a tree so that tree can die of loneliness. At tea time, I would run across the Angan, burn my feet, sit on my grandmother's lap, listen to a long bullshit story, waiting for biscuits. Because he who has the biscuits gets to tell the story.
A freelance writer suffering from a rare and debilitating disorder began researching the thoroughbred. And the more she dug, the brighter grew her interest. The result of her solitary labors was the rebirth of Seabiscuit, a little package of dynamite that not only ran fast, but lifted a spiritually bankrupt nation from its knees.
At the end of the story, my grandmother would pull out a steel tin and pull out the greatest biscuit in the world, the Parle G. Non-Indians, on behalf of a billion people, can I humbly say, your cookies. You don't even know. A cookie is just an overweight biscuit with low self-esteem. That's all that shit is.
Cookie, cookie, lend me your comb. Cookie, cookie.
Parle G, yo, is the greatest biscuit in the world. Witty. Parle G witty, you will not share with anybody.
Here's your cup.
Oh, thank you,
milk,
man.
Sugar?
No, no, I'll take it straight.
Mm. I'll just have some tea if you don't mind.
Parle G without tea, doggy. It's because of the physics of the biscuit. When it's dry, it's hard as... But you dip it in anything. No spinal cord, no core strength, just falls apart like a dead hamster. Who designed this biscuit where the minute you expose it to liquid, it's gone? It's like an edible Mumbai road. Parle G is not a biscuit, it's a test of your own timing and reflexes. No matter which country we are from, we have all had that moment where we have over-dipped the biscuit. We must now quickly get the biscuit from the cup to our mouth. Over 73 years of independence, nobody has figured out you need to start out with the cup closer to your mouth. No. We start out with the cup in Pakistan. We are dipping over there. The only cup Pakistan will win this year, by the way. Yeah. Hey, Thread! Hey, Thread!
We're back here. Ladies and gentlemen, a sort of disconcerting thing happened while record was on. The Firesign Theater left, outraged.
I think from their talk that they were very right.
Well,
they look hungry to me.
But in any case, they're gone, and in their place to try and fill this hour is a group that I've been trying to get
our stomachs too.
To try and get on the air for some time. A new religious sect here in New York called the Gluttons. And the Gluttons have managed to come up today for lunch pail. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you all.
Oh, it's a great pleasure to be here, Mr. Gorman. Gorman, you know, is a Hungarian dish. It is blood of a man, Gorman. And eat it and become strong like man so you can pray and eat more. Isn't that right, Wadi?
Yeah, that's right. What?
What?
Can you tell us a little bit about the Gluttons and yes, when you established your sect?
A little bit about it. Yet you do know
we
the
have
Glutton.
No sect.
No,
sect.
We are sectless.
Eat. Sectless.
The Glutton were the first originally in India, the old days, in about 2200 BC. And the Glutton was the religious sect, what right. believed that the thing that we all are doing together, to have to eat,
have
is to survive.
Only thing have to do.
The together. Only thing we have to do together is
eat.
To eat. And we all, we are all believing that. And so we are eating all the time now.
You look that extraordinary looking. How much do you weigh?
I am a very heavy glutton. I am of the rank of gourmet. I weigh 360 pounds. I'm 5'2", which make up for that.
How much total? How much weight?
I am
is
only
on your
a novice. I am known as a fat boy.
Fat yes. boy.
I only weigh about 220 pounds.
Fat head, we call
fat
it.
Fat head, right? I have gone through the starch initiation, also known as the right to pablum. Isn't that the right?
The right to pablum?
Right to pablum. To enter the sect, one must eat 400 pounds of pablum in one night of ecstasy. Oh, yes.
That's extraordinary. Have you done that? If all of you have eaten 400 pounds of pablum just to get into the sect?
Oh, sure.
That's extraordinary.
That's nothing. That's without sugar. That's the aesthetic side.
That's in the high church, however, you know.
Well, what do you do by nature of rituals and celebrations? And do you worship? Do you pray?
Well, we sing.
You sing.
You went, oh, we are the gluttons. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We are the gluttons.
Here we are the gluttons.
Yeah, the glutton. That is what we are. That's a translation from the Indian, which is. Oh, yeah, the glutton.
What prompted you to move from
hunger.
India here?
Hunger.
Hunger.
There's
despair.
No food there. Despair, yeah. Hunger, despair. Denigration,
death.
Despair.
Political
no,
situation.
No food there. There's
bad.
Nothing but rice, and one cannot pray just eating
You can't
rice.
Eat cows there
no,
either,
you
see.
We can't.
No, we can't eat cows here.
No, we can't eat
well,
cows
when did you arrive here? Just last week?
We came over on a banana boat. It had taken 2 weeks to come
You
here.
Cleaned out now, I hear.
Totally. It was riding very high in the water by the time.
We ate the skins and everything, you know.
Would you like to read one of our prayers?
Oh, dear, this is one of the small prayers that we are reading. You are asking about our ceremonial and initiation rites, you know. This is one of the prayers that we have after several days of eating, you see. We all say this in chorus, but we say it in Hindi. And we can't do that here. Oh, that's very good. Yeah, some of that.
Sure, I want
to read Thank you. Yes.
Mm. I want to eat that on the other channel too, please.
Yes, please. Yes, I am filled up with food. I get very exhausted.
Oh, yes.
I become dizzy as the golden flame flows out of my mouth. I flop down and my food smolders. Then the thing that always happens, the small flames scream at me to let them get out. I collapse and my heart breaks into smoldering pieces as the flames get taller and tear me open. It's an exotic experience.
Oh, you read very well too, Wajan. Very, very well.
That actually
in
happens,
Hindi, it is obscene, you know.
Oh, my goodness gracious me. Of course, you have to get rid of all that terrible food somewhere, you know.
Well, I was wondering about that. Do you have to carry around special equipment?
Oh,
and
no. Big bags. Big plastic
bags.
Plastic bags?
We call them sacks.
Sacks.
Where we the sackcloth. We have a sackcloth that we are. You notice we are wearing the ceremonial costume, which is a lobster bib. That's stained right. With the food, you see.
With the ecstasy of the last meal.
Oh, yes, these we are wearing these sheets, which are stained with food also.
And sweatpants.
The giving of the sack. When we say we gave Wahan the sack, many people in England think we fire him from the group.
No,
we give him the sack for the food.
Big, yes.
We have also we have a sect that broke off from us 3,000 years ago, known as the Flemmers.
The Flemmers.
They live entirely on phlegm. But that is a very strange sect, and they are actually heretical.
Tell me this. I think a lot of people have been disconcerted by.
Or you can get disconcerted in this country, which is illegal, you know, in India, you know, except in private to get disconcerted, man and woman.
Well, they've been troubled by your habit of carrying around the sacks with you, and it's really.
A man's got to eat,
sanitation.
Mr. Gorman. A man must
eat.
No, but I mean, I'm just talking about the waste product.
There is
oh,
no waste.
The waste product. No, we are eating the waste product.
Yeah. As well.
Oh, we've worked it all out where there's no waste. No,
that's
my goodness. You are
studying us for the astronaut program, you know.
Yes, indeed.
You eat your own waste product.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Right.
The methane gas that we create uses to make the farm machinery to run to make the more food for us to
very
eat.
Very effective.
Then you're really self-sufficient.
Recycling
aren't you?
It into the system.
No, Hindu.
Hindu.
I saw a hand behind a tree, and it was green. I didn't stop to see whose hand it was. I thought it was a big green man hand. Oh, and I ran and ran and ran until I was out of air. Mm. My mother and father thought I was nuts, and my sister thought I was nuts. But I was not nuts, I was eating nuts.
You were eating nuts.
That's how it works.
Oh, would you open up that bag, please? Now you see, that is a bag of pig churls.
Mm-hmm.
400 pounds of pig churls.
It's extraordinary.
There is
one sheep churl in here.
We have been driven out of many countries because of our dietary habits. The Muslim countries tossed us out because of our tremendous passion for lamb and pig. We brought our own pigs into Turkey and were immediately shown to the border.
Well, did you have problems in customs coming in here?
Our customs gave us problems all the time. Turkey. We brought the 400 turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but they were, you know, they were still alive.
They had
visas and everything. It was not the same.
We do not eat the things we do not eat because of religious purposes are grains, macrobiotic foods,
yes.
Natural foods
right.
Make us sick as a pig.
Yes.
And one of our members is a pig.
Chewing gum, we eat a lot.
Chewing gum, bubble gum, very good. Cyclamate, very, very good. 4 or 5 grains of cyclamate with every meal.
What we do not eat.
Strong like lead.
Right. We do not eat dead animals.
No, never eat dead animals.
Only alive animals.
Sin. It's a sin to eat a dead animal.
Right. You've got to participate in it with a, like an old friend, you see.
What plans do you
we
have
don't
for
eat
touring?
Feet either.
Are you going to be traveling around the country? And
rolling, we call it.
Rolling around the country.
Yes, we keep gluttoning around. Oh, it's a wonderful. We are going to be playing the El Monte Legion Hall. We're going to be doing the Veterans Tap Dance Hall in Providence.
Providence.
And we are going to be eating our way across the Midwest.
There's a baked beans festival in Maine that we will be attending.
Yes, indeed.
We have great slogans. I will read you another one of
would
our
you,
great
would
slogans.
You do that,
this
do
is
you
a
mind
revolutionary
would you pass
statement.
That pig, please?
Yeah, pass him that pig, will you? Sometimes this is a translation from one of the great statements that is written over our temple, the temple of the stomach. Okay. It's just outside of New Delhi.
It's known as the Tommy Temple.
Sometimes when you meet your relatives, you think you're a lollipop.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Just right. That is written. And that mantra alone has driven crazy many novice, or as we say, fat boys. The many little monks that hang around the temple eating scraps.
What was
scrap
the difficult...
Scrap iron, pig iron, pig is our favorite.
You eat iron?
Iron? What?
Pig iron? Scrap
oh,
iron?
Oh, don't be. He's making fun of us.
I believe
he
so.
He must be talking silly. Eat pig iron? That is incredible. No, aluminum, of course, for the veins and the liver.
What were the most difficult?
Silver for the kidney. Zinc
for the
knees.
Parts of your initiation.
He thinks we're savages.
The most difficult parts of our
initiation ceremony.
Oh difficult well, part. I suppose
the pablum you had to eat.
The pablum comes very much later.
Very
you know, that's the sustenance of the great stomach.
That's making of the great bloated intestine, which is the like the cornucopia of the gluttons, the great intestine, right, or the large intestine. Mm-hmm.
But what else did you have to go through? Eat your way
customs.
Through. Customs. No. I mean, initiation.
Initiation. Other things? Swallowing goldfish. That, you know, that is a fraternity practice here that was picked up from old glutton practice, which is when you visit your old thing, when you visit the emperor's court, eat anything in the courtyard, I think was the old mantra. And the only thing in the inner courtyard is a great carp goldfish.
I'm having a religious experience.
Oh, wait. Oh, here he comes.
I'm having a religious experience.
Thank you, Shiva.
I can feel it coming now.
Oh, here he comes. He's heaving with ecstasy. Let it come. Let it all hang out, Wajan.
It's going to be coming now.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you.
I'm so hungry.
It's good to eat a friend, my friend.
There's nothing to eat here.
Now, I used to work in America in the year 2002. It didn't go very well, so I left for browner pastures. And then, honestly, I didn't think about you guys for 15 years. Because, honestly, there is nothing that you can get in America that I can't get in India. And then my government banned beef. And I was like, you know, an international career might not be such a bad thing. Make no mistake, I'm just here for the beef. A human being needs 9 to 10 ounces of beef every 15 years to stay healthy. A fucking doctor told me that shit. Oh, we ain't done yet, San Francisco. Do you want to know what my job was in 2002? I was a dishwasher in Chicago. Now, no, Indians don't get sad and sentimental. The minute you mention any other profession apart from doctor, lawyer, or engineer, Indians are like, see, he struggled. I did not struggle. This is not an inspirational story. Being a dishwasher in America is fantastic. You get headgear, mouth gear, rubber gloves, apron, brushes, detergents. We give less equipment to a surgeon. At Santokh Singh Nursing Home. When you're a dishwasher, you spend most of your day watching food leave the kitchen. The one thing I always loved to watch was a beautiful piece of beef, 10 ounces, the filet mignon. I'm sorry, Indians, filet mignon. And sometimes that piece of meat would come back unfinished, few bites left, and it just, God, it bred this darkness, this resentment inside of me. I was like, look at these fucking Americans wasting their beef. How dare you? You know, one day I will go back to India and there I can eat all the beef I want. But you have to understand, this was a $29 steak. To me back then, spending 29 bucks on beef represented everything in the world I didn't have. You know, peace of mind, success, the ability to kill a god. And so as a treat for myself, I'd been saving up for that steak dinner and I had the money, and just before I could eat it, the American government took my dream away. They didn't ban beef, my visa expired, I had to leave and shit. You'll find out. And like I said, I didn't think about that beef for 15 years until last month. True story, last month, I went back to my college, Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois. I was their commencement speaker. I got given an honorary doctorate. I'm Dr. Das now. And you did well in your board exams. But much better than receiving my degree for saving lives. What felt a lot better was the meal I had after. Because after that, after 15 years, I walked into the Grand Lux Cafe on Michigan Avenue in Chicago, where I washed dishes for 2 years and I ordered the filet mignon and I finished every bite of that steak. Kind of. This is not an inspirational story. Keep your shit together. I've had maybe 300-400 steaks in my life. Don't tell the BJP.
In history, Patty, well, today, of course, is the 38th of Cunegonda. And on this day in 1938 B.C., Patty, Mr. George Antrobus invented the wheel.
And just in time.
And in 1889, the Peace of Humus broke out, ending the Hundred Years' War against the cows.
Yep.
That steak is the most average steak I have ever eaten in my life. It was a shitty steak. I don't know what I thought would happen, that I'd take one bite and the lighting in the restaurant would change and music would begin to play and all the waiters would start a slow clap and they'd come and put their forks and knives on my table like the faculty from A Beautiful Mind, and two children would stand up on chairs and salute me and be like, "Mac Captain, Beef Captain." But none of that shit happened. In reality, I just sat there and I did something that I haven't had time to do in 3 years. I just thought about shit. And I thought about how many Hindus this story is going to piss off. There's gonna be some tweets. Or maybe they don't care as long as it's not a brown cow. I thought about how eating an average piece of beef still felt better than shooting an average movie. I thought about how this might be a story my grandfather Baba would tell. We used to wait 15 years for one piece of beef. And then I thought I should stop eating this because this is a shit steak. And my stomach will hurt for real soon. Then my waitress came over and I noticed her looking at my unfinished piece of beef. She said, "Are you all set?" "Yeah. I'm done." "So you're finished?" "No." And then I did the most un-Indian thing I might have ever done. I tipped. Well. My check was $42. I left my waitress a $350 tip with a note that said, look, I know where you are right now because I've been here too. But you won't always be here. I promise you. Just know that. Smiley face. Which is a pretty sweet thing to say. Can we agree on that, yeah? Like, that's the lesson I learned. If you want to feel good again, stop constructing good things for yourself. Just say good shit to other people and you'll feel amazing. And if you're gonna say good shit to other people, make damn sure that you say it out loud. Because if you write it down on a piece of paper in block letters, I know where you are right now. Because I've been here too. But you won't always be here. I promise you. Just know that. Smiley face. She probably ran into the kitchen like, this Indian guy wants to fuck me for $350. What the hell do I do? So I panic and I run out of this restaurant and I see that the waitress is running after me and she stops me and she's like, wait, you left me a $350 tip. And I tell her the 2-minute version of what it just took me an hour to tell you guys. And she's like, wow, that's a crazy story. I just thought you miscalculated the tip. Which seemed unlikely because, you know, Indian people. You're like, so smart. Good night. Thank you so much, San Francisco.
Nothing
but
Indians.
That's right, folks.
Nothing
but Indians.